Okay, let's begin. We've got a couple bills on the agenda, obviously a major bill. Just as we start the committee meeting, for those who are here, a couple of changes. You'll notice to my left, Angie Haig is not here. She's on maternity leave until June. She and Peter had their first baby in November. And so Jane is serving as committee administrator, and Kim Babine is serving as the legislative assistant. We also, for those of you who are older, at least in terms of years of service, members of this committee, you'll note some new senators at the table. Welcoming back to the committee, we have Senator Olson, who's been on the committee, I don't know, longer than myself, possibly, and Senator Fischbach, who had been on the committee before. Also, Senator Roebling's not here. Obviously, I'm not sure who replaced Judge Neville, but I think Senator Olson did. And so obviously we miss Tom. And we have, as I think people on the committee understand, I thought it made good sense with the request that came from the four division chairs who were not serving on this committee to place them on the committee, Senator Higgins, Senator Tomasoni, Senator Foley, and Senator Vickerman. And some discussion in the Rules Committee about the size of the committee. I will, although there had been some discussion last year about keeping some of these committees to a smaller number, this is actually still remains the smallest finance committee I've ever served on, with the exception of this past year. So I think we'll have 18 people on the committee. And again, compared to Senator Olson, Senator Stumpf, correct me if I'm, Senator Berglund, if I'm mistaken, but I think this still remains the smallest finance committee other than this past year. So those are the introductions. First bill on the agenda then, obviously the transportation bill is the large bill today. We have a bill that we think shouldn't be a controversial bill in terms of some of the TANF allocations. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this bill will give the Department of Human Services authority to use funds that we spend in the Working Family Credit to buy down Minnesota's work participation rate at the federal level. We worked very hard last session to pass legislation to make sure that we would meet our work participation rate beginning this year. But parts of what we passed have been delayed because of implementation issues within the Department of Human Services. And so that means that we will not meet our work participation rate this year without this bill. The bill allows the department to go back and claim working family credit to buy down the work participation rate for previous years as well. We aren't sure if they'll be able to do that or if it will be enough to offset penalties that otherwise might be imposed. But last year when we worked on this legislation, the department told us that they felt that if we were close to the work participation rate, that they would be able to possibly negotiate away any penalties that we otherwise might have. So I feel that this bill is still important in its retroactive features.
Steve said he's going to take some of this out.
So the bill does not change any money that we spend. It just gives the Department of Human Services authorization to count money that we already spend on the Working Family Credit to increase our maintenance of effort, which then, under the new rules that the federal government has adopted, for a period of time will allow us to buy down our work participation rate and thereby avoid penalties. The bill also has the impact of then creating savings in the general fund and expenditures in the TANF fund. I'm sorry that we don't have a fiscal note ready today. We thought we would when I left here on Friday. But the amount of money that it saves for fiscal year 08 out of the general fund and the expenditures in TANF correlate is $8,834,000. For fiscal year 10, it is $11,779,000. And for fiscal year 11, it's $2,945,000. And the reason it tapers off in fiscal year 11 is because we do believe that in fiscal year 11 we will meet our work participation rate because all of the elements of last year's bill will be implemented by the year.
Yep. And Senator Berglund, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, we of course expect that these savings will be credited against our division in regard to any target that we might be given in the future for saving money in the general fund.
And Senator Berglund, you and I discussed last week the need to try to hear this as quickly as possible, and you noted the absence of a fiscal note. So I wonder if somebody from the department can offer some testimony to just to confirm what you've said or supplement what you've said insofar as the fiscal aspect of this is concerned.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, as the gentleman comes up to the table, just curious, you know, it's when you look at the sheet that was handed out and just reading some of the bullets, could you refresh my memory on what some of the terminologies are, like the work participation rate? What exactly is that? You know, in education we have kind of like a maintenance of effort under the special education, but the work participation rates are federal mandates that have been dictated to the state.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, yes. Not only have they been dictated to the state, the definition of what meets the work participation rate has been changed by the federal government. So, for example, work search used to count all the time in our TANF program as a work activity. Now it only counts during the first 6 weeks that you're in the program. And after that, looking for work doesn't count as a work activity. So, obviously, it becomes much more difficult to meet these work participation rates, but we do have a plan to do that. It's just that it takes a while to get it ramped up in terms of the systems changes within the Department of Human Services.
And, Mr. Chairman, just curious, do the work participation rates, as dictated by from the federal government, do they adjust when the unemployment rate goes up?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, not at this time. We certainly hope that would be something that the federal government might look at in the future, but when they reauthorized TANF and created these new rules, they were not anticipating that there would be a downturn in the economy, which we subsequently are experiencing.
Kind of short-sighted.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, just to plug another effort that we will be making this year is that we did put money in our budget last year for supported work or transitional work. And those are jobs that people on the TANF program are working, but they're not on the payroll of the organization. The program pays them to be involved in the work. And it's on a temporary basis, and most of the clients then phase into a paid employment situation. And those types of programs are needed during a soft economy more than ever. The second year of our appropriation was vetoed by the governor last year, so we will be making an effort to try to get that second year funded this year. It is needed more than ever this year.
Thank you.
So if we could just have some testimony in terms of what where the agency is in terms of the fiscal aspects of this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Nelson. I'm in the budget office of the Children and Family Services business within the Department of Human Services. I work with the TANF program and other programs in that part of the agency. The MFIP program is funded with a mix of general and TANF funds. And in the last couple years, because we do not expect to make the work participation rate that Senator Berglund and Senator Stumpf were just talking about, the mix of TANF funds and general funds has changed such that a greater proportion are general funds. That's the operation of what's known as the maintenance of effort provisions. With this new rule that the federal agency came out with, it is now clear that we can count a broader amount of spending that the state does in its budget as part of the broader TANF maintenance of effort program and get credit for more of the spending that we're doing in order that we can reduce the work participation rate target that the federal government requires for us. And by counting this, what's called excess maintenance of effort, the excess spending that we claim to the federal government, the rules allow us to go for the lower target, and thus our existing performance has a shorter hurdle that we have to go over. And we estimate that we have sufficient excess spending that are serving families and children, that it would allow us to meet this rate in fiscal 9 and fiscal 10. As Senator Berglund has said, with the changes that occurred last year, we will be making it in fiscal 11. And when I'm talking fiscal, it's federal fiscal year. So when you see that the numbers first rise from 8 million to 11 million and down to 3, that's just reflecting the quarters of the federal fiscal year and how they straddle the state fiscal year. One of the pieces in this is that the federal agency has told us that we can go back and change some of our claim for prior years. And that will have an advantage to us in this current year of state fiscal 08. It will allow us to have a lower hurdle that we have to move over. There might not be sufficient funds available in 08 in 07 to allow us to clear the hurdle fully, but our penalty exposure related to our performance will be reduced to the extent that we can make changes in our federal report. And under current law, we don't have authority to do that. So one of the provisions in this language is to let us go back with respect federal fiscal 07 and make those changes. When we initially heard about the rule changes, there was an allowance to go back to federal fiscal 06 and alter your spending claim. But since then, the deadline for that has passed. So we have until the end of April to make a change in our claim. But given the lead time that we would need to make those changes and the calculations associated with it, the timing of this bill being early in the session would work for us and would give us the opportunity for some penalty relief with respect our 08 performance.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Other questions from committee members? Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, the question I think was just put to me whether or not to inquire as to the forecast, the current budget forecast, and whether or not penalties for TANF are built into the forecast in that regard and what those amounts are.
Mr. Nelson.
Let me clarify, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. There are two levels of penalties. The first penalty is that you have to spend more maintenance of effort in more state funds in the MFIP program versus TANF. And the next level of penalty is a penalty that after the claims, the performance reports have been calculated by the federal government, and they look at what rate we had to meet versus what rate we did meet. There is a calculation that is done that determines what your penalty would be with respect that year. There's a lag in that calculation. The base for the penalty is a percentage of your TANF block grant, which is about $265 million. So that's the base for the penalty. In the first year, it's 5%. Subsequent year, it's an additional 2% if there are consecutive penalties. There is some allowance in the federal rules that depending on how close or how far away you are from meeting the actual target, that the penalty will be in some proportion to that gap. But if you miss it in a few years in a row, that sort of forgiveness ends, and the penalty would be larger. We don't feel that the penalty we will not make the work participation rate in 07. that's done, and we haven't heard yet how far we were away. We feel we're about 17, 18 percentage points short. They will let us know, give us an opportunity to correct our performance, and only after that would we be subject to a penalty. So in the forecast, we don't assume a penalty other than the higher the higher maintenance of effort amount, because we can't really tell what it would be, and it would be in the out biennium if it were levied. So that amount is not part of the forecast.
Okay, thanks.
But Mr. Chairman, this bill will help us avoid that second penalty as well.
Thanks. Further questions from the committee? Senator Berglund, anything else? So do you want to move
Mr.
the bill?
Chairman,
or?
I would move then that Senate File 2564 be recommended to pass.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Okay, next members on the agenda. We've got Senate File 2521. Members might be aware that we've talked about transportation, and I believe Senator Murphy has a bill he'd like to present to us. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, this transportation bill is not completely different than it was last year, but there are a couple highlights, and Senator Dibble and I will go over much of those changes. But first, once again, our staff did an excellent job. They were in all weekend working to make sure that this was going to be able to be put together. And there's been folks from the administration, the finance folks from MnDOT have been very helpful. The chief of the state patrol is actually here today to listen to this. We have 40 additional troopers in the bill, and hopefully our target is to add a complement that gets us up to 600 troopers in Minnesota. It's sorely needed. And they've been, the Department of Public Safety and the State Patrol have been very helpful in helping us realize that goal in the bill. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to walk through the bill quickly.
Senator, before you do, do you want to adopt the division report?
I would make that motion.
So you're working off the division report then at that point?
No, the
committee engrossment.
Okay. So Senator Murphy moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are several amendments that we'll adopt, and if I could kind of walk through the bill first, then we'll come back and take care of those amendments, and then I'll turn it over to Senator Dibble to explain what some of the changes were with metro area transit and Greater Minnesota Transit. Mr. Chairman and members, Article 1 is the boilerplate transportation appropriations. There are a couple things in here that are a little bit different than last year. We've got on page 2, there's $250,000 to the North Star Corridor Development Authority to kind of plan on the extension of that rail line to where it should have been in the first place. There's the Port Development Assistance money that was in there last year. On page 3, there's also a line for highway debt service. That's the amount that we are currently carrying. On page 4, you turn and see what kind of money is going to the county state aids and municipal state aids on lines 5 and 9. Page 5, we start talking about public safety and the money that is appropriated there. On the next page, page 6, is where the 40 additional troopers are at, and also the legislative goal to reach that 600 level. Section 5, further down on page 6, is the spending authority, which reflects the authority needed to not only keep the I-35W bridge project online, but also to encapsulate the rest of the construction project through 09. On page 6, line 29, we start a value capture study. We pick up the money for that, and that's going to be done by the Center for Transportation Studies. That's on page 7. That's $325,000. Basically, this is an idea, I believe, that came from the local units of government. As we're building new roads and corridors and new transit systems, we're going to look at the idea of maybe capturing the additional value of those properties around those transit and roadways to use for transportation dollars. Article 2 is...
Senator Murphy, before we get to Article 2, on the state trooper provision, what would be the number with the 40 additional troopers? What does that take the state patrol up to?
That gets us to about 450 or 550, is that right, Chief? $590. I'm sorry. We already have 550.
All right, So the language in here talks about the goal of raising it to 600, so that would be almost to that optimum goal, obviously.
We're getting close.
Include the state capital.
What's been happening in the absence of the 50 troopers?
Tomasoni gets to speed.
Because they're everywhere already.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
that's Senator Murphy. What's the
Representative Riccovina asked for a little amendment there that these 40 have to be someplace south of Chisholm. All kidding aside, Mr. Chairman, committee members, about 2/3 of all fatal crashes that occur on our highways are because of something that we do behind the wheel. It's not because that there's something wrong with the road. It's because we're drinking, we're smoking, we're chit-chatting with people in the back of the back. We're text messaging, using cell phones, or we're doing a combination of things. And I think everybody here has probably seen the person driving down 94 with a knee on the steering wheel, cigarette in the mouth, donut in one hand, and the cell phone in the other hand. That's how about 70% of all the fatal crashes occur in the state of Minnesota. And in greater Minnesota, where once again, or I should say on rural two-lane roads, where the majority of these fatals occur, it's imperative to have those maroon cruisers out there because that catches people's attention. It keeps them focused on what they should be doing, and that's driving. The other thing is that in greater Minnesota, sometimes the only person to respond to an accident in the first few minutes is a highway patrol person. And where ambulance service is sometimes, it takes longer for our ambulance service to get there. So having a well-trained troopers out on the road helps save lives. They're the first ones on the crash scenes. They're the ones that are keeping traffic away from the accident. They're the ones that are applying the tourniquets and bandages to keep people alive. Mr. Chairman, this is the one part of the bill that I feel overly strong about, put it that way.
Senator Betzold?
Mr. Chair, I've got a technical question. The division report says, page 5, delete section 4, which I believe is the part that has the state trooper provision in it. And am I reading this correctly?
Senator Murphy?
Session meeting at 10:30.
The
so are they going to be here about 10:15 or so?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Bierzowski is going to help.
The
original bill. I see.
All right, Mr. Chairman. Looks like we've got it cleared up.
Well, Senator Murphy, I think when you offer amendments, it'll clarify some of that, I think.
Yeah, we'll get it.
Okay.
We'll get her.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, you were just starting to talk about property tax values near the roads and transit ways and the state claiming some of that property tax value to help pay for the projects. And the question that I have about that is that currently under state law, the local community is responsible for paying 50% of the operating costs of the transit lines. And so are you just talking about new projects? And will they have to pay 50% of the operating costs also? And will there be enough value left for them to be able to absorb that responsibility?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, this is simply a study that's going to be done by the University of Minnesota, the Center for Transportation.
It's just a study. It's not part of your financing of the bill.
And that's correct. And okay. I'm going to let Senator Dibble answer the second part of your question in regards to the property tax or property tax donation.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, the only comment I was going to add, Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, is that the requirement that counties pay 50% of transitway rail operating is eliminated in this proposal, in this bill.
Mm-hmm. How nice.
Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Much better.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, that's a, we did that in last year's bill as well. And the theory behind that is that we're going to be building a lot of new transitways. And this, which goes across several different jurisdictions, so we might as well just, and it is a state expense. These are state-operated transitways, and we all have a little bit of skin in that game.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
If I may add, the study of this value capture concept would apply to transit as well as roadway types of facilities, and it's not geared specifically to merely capital or operating. And it's an idea that was brought to us jointly by the Citizens League and the Chamber of Commerce, and it's and we're taking a look at it. And what it hopes to do is to perhaps capture some of that early speculation activity that goes on when there's a rumored improvement to an area. Immediately speculators swoop in, start driving up land prices to a pretty extraordinary fashion, and that might there might be some multiple public policy opportunities by taking a look at it, this idea. But it is just a study that the Center for Transportation Studies is going to carry out.
Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, my eye got caught on the capital security section and the language saying that the commissioner may not spend any trunk highway funds for capital security and may not transfer troopers to capital security. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about the transportation budget, so have we previously been spending trunk highway funds for capital security? Can you explain what this is all about?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, no, we don't spend gas tax money on capital security. That's always been a general fund item. And when we offer up our amendments, you'll see that that section is going to get cleaned out here. Okay. It's part of our general fund turnover back to Senator Cohen and this committee to help balance the books. There are several general fund items that we have in the bill that we're going to get rid of. That's one of them.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, this is not a new concept. This is just some old language that got picked
Correct.
Up. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, going on, Article 2 is the local road and bridge bonding. Trunk highway and local road and bridge bonding. As you see, Section 1 is the annual debt service surcharge. This is the 2.5 cents that we let float on the gas tax to help retire some of the debt services. Same thing, same proposal as was last year. It's capped at 2.5 cents. It'll go up to 2.5 cents after the second or third year, and it will ride there to help pay for the debt service for about the next 14 or 15 years, and then it will start to click back off as the debt service on the bonds are retired. And that total appropriation is on the next page. It shows $2.262 million. $1 billion, I should say, and that's the amount of bonding that we will authorize under this provision. If you go to page 9, we start talking about where some of this money is going to be spent. There's going to be, an interchange account, same as last year. There's also going to be, if you look down at line 19 on page 9, there's $300 million bonding authority there. And that's going into the bridge program. And the bridge program is in the back of the bill, and I'll explain that in a few minutes. But that's an idea that came from the House. And I think that at this time in the state of Minnesota, it's time to take care of that. At the bottom of the page on line 33 is the Great River Road expenditures. That was in the bill last year. Page 10, the Urban Partnership Agreement, and everybody's heard about the UPA. There's $24 million in this bill to help pay for that. We also have trunk highway bonds that are going to be used to rectify the dilapidated state of the Mankato District headquarters. We're going to take care of some ongoing maintenance needs at the Chaska Truck Station, Carver County Partnership. There's also money here for Rochester and Maple Grove truck stations. And then if you see on page 11 at the top, subdivision 8, that's where there's $50 million worth of GO bonds in this bill for the local bridge replacement rehabilitation program. Further down the page, there's $10 million for the local road improvement program. On the next page, you'll see that there's some more UPA money there for the Met Council to help cover their costs. There's also money at the middle of the page, $18 million, to fix it to the Department of Administration to fix the transportation building exterior across the street here. That was in the bill last year, and we all know that that needs to happen. Article 3 is where the meat of the bill actually starts. This is the tab V. Article 3 is all the taxes, but Section 1 deals with the tab B schedule. A similar provision was in the bill last year. This just, what we're doing is we're pulling the caps off here, and we're slowing the, actually what we're doing is we're slowing the rate of that depreciation in that first couple years, which means there'll be more tax collected. You can see how the schedule changes. This is the same thing as it was last year. If you don't trade your vehicle in, you're going to keep paying the same of what you're paying today. But if you go out and buy a different vehicle, you're going to be put on the new schedule, which means that if it's a car that's probably 5 years old or newer, you're going to pay a little bit more. If it's a brand-new car, Cadillac Escalade, for example, you're going to be asked to pay substantially more. On page 15, we have the low-income motor fuels tax credit. This is a $25 credit for all those folks who are in the lowest of lowest income brackets. This basically offsets the rate of tax that they may pay. On page 16, line 4, that shows that our gas tax on all vehicles that, you know, that we would be using is going to go from 20 to 25 cents. So that's where the 5 cent a gallon gas tax provision is. The rest of the section is just boilerplate until we get over to page 17. In the middle, that starts with section 7. This is the index provision, members, and I just want to talk about that for a second. Indexing the gas tax gives a lot of people heartburn, but it's one way that we ensure that we continue to do a good job on Minnesota's roads. The problem that we've had here in Minnesota is that we haven't increased the dedicated source of revenue, which is the gas tax, since 1988. It's been 20 cents for, well, that's 20 years now, and it's about time that we change it. The gas tax ensures that let's just say that inaction by the legislature won't deter road work from occurring in the future. The index basically lets the gas tax float up by a tenth or two-tenths or three-tenths of a cent year in and year out. I just want to mention that there has been some talk about the index and trying to work out something between the surcharge on the gasoline to retire the debt service and the indexing. What we wanted to use the index for was once you go up to 2.5 cents, which is basically in the first or in the third year of the bonding program, then every year after that, there's going to be more and more debt service piled on top of that 2.5 cents. $2.2 billion worth of bonds is worth about 8 cents a gallon on the gas tax. What we wanted to do is use the index to let the gas tax ride up to help pay for that increased cost of retiring the debt. Now, there's a lot of people out there, like I said, that don't want to put any tax increase on automatic pilot, so we're trying to work something out before we have this bill and taxes, I believe, on Wednesday. We'll have that worked out. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, this provision that you're talking about is the one that I dislike in your bill. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I supported the bill last year the way you had it, and I was expecting to support it again this year, but this indexing is troublesome to me.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
So I'm glad to hear you're going to try to fix it or do something with it between now and taxes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dill, you did support the bill last year, and that was greatly appreciated. And last year's bill did not have the index provision in there. This year, we're trying to work it so that, you know, the worst thing that we can do is issue $2.2 billion worth of debt and then not have a way of paying for it. That's kind of why we're in the position that we are today. before the transportation bill of 2001, I believe, or no, yeah, 2001, when we issued millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of debt, the department was paying out of our gas tax revenues about 0.8% of all collections towards debt service. Today, that number is over 8% of all the money that we're collecting is going towards debt service, and that's millions and millions of dollars that are going out the door to pay the bankers instead of doing maintenance on our roads. What we want to do is build a program so that we pay the debt service off as we go so that we still have a good bevy of money to provide maintenance on our roadways. In the district that I represent, in MnDOT District 6, which is the southeastern corner of Minnesota, about 80% of all of our roads are going to need to be torn up and replaced in 5 years. We just don't have the money to do that. And so if we add debt on top of debt, we don't have money to provide maintenance. And that's where we've gotten into this dilapidated roadway index that we have here in Minnesota.
Senator Dill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy. I would rather vote for a bigger gas tax increase right out the chute here. And not index it. And I understand what you're talking about in terms of servicing debt, which I totally agree with. We need to service the debt. But to put it on automatic pilot and not have us come back to vote on it doesn't appeal to me. So I'd rather just do a bigger gas tax increase or phase it in over time to satisfy the debt service requirement than to put it on an automatic pilot.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chairman, Timothy. Senator Dill, that's exactly what we're working on. I think that we do have an agreement in place which would cap that that debt service surcharge at 5 cents instead of 2.5. That's kind of the trade-off. Like I say, $2.2 billion is worth about 8 cents on the gas tax. And the Minnesota Truckers Association has been working pretty hard to try to come up with some compromise language. I think that we've got something in play. The House is going to offer it to the bill in the Tax Committee today. And by the time you see this bill, again, Senator Dill, you're not on taxes. By the time you see it again on the Senate floor, we will have those changes in here.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, when you're looking at a variety of these things, you don't look at depreciating, for instance. I see the Mankato District Headquarters. I can remember when that was built not too long ago, and the question I have is, don't you set aside some money or look at funding for that in the future rather than take it the way it is?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, the Mankato building is the last building in greater Minnesota that needs to be replaced. We've systematically knocked down the rest of these district headquarters all across the state. There is normally a little bit of money to help with preservation. Unfortunately, building preservation when it comes to deciding between building preservation and making sure that you've got enough troopers out on the highway, building preservation probably slips through the cracks. And it's the same way with our colleges and universities. We just don't set enough money aside to continue to do maintenance on our structures.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, some years back, MnDOT had various amounts that they were charging off as far as time is concerned. And can you tell me how long a bridge is supposed to last or how long concrete pavement is supposed to last, and the same with the blacktop? Do you have figures like that that you can dictate what those are?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Foley, these are just rough numbers, but most of the time roadways are built so that they last about 50 years, and if they're maintained, which is going out and filling the potholes and fixing little cracks that come along, they'll last about 50 years before they got to be tore up and redone. Bridges are around 70 years. That's just I think that's a good number.
Is that, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, is that predicated on the weight, especially on the truck that they couldn't put? What's the effect on that versus the effect on a car?
Right. Mr. Chairman, bridges that carry a lot of weight, a lot of truck weight, once again, it comes down to the maintenance, Senator Foley, and you can talk with a lot of the bridge folks. They can get bridges to last for a very long time, even if they're heavily traveled. There's no doubt that trucks do a substantial amount of damage to our roads and bridges. But when you talk to the bridge folks, they calculate all that in when they're building the bridge or when they're expanding the bridge about, it's about weight. It's all about weight and how much a bridge can handle. They design them beefy so that they will handle a percentage over what they're rated at. And once again, they'll tell you, if the maintenance is provided on the bridge in a timely fashion and barges don't run into them or things like that, that these bridges will last 70 years.
Senator Rickman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, you know what I'm going to ask you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, we're going to get to Highway 60. It's going to get fixed.
Be like Senator Dill. I voted for it last year, and I'll vote for it this year, but I want some kind of insurance because that's a death trap.
Right.
We've lost 36 people, more than fell off and died on that bridge because it's 4-2. And I'm willing to wait, but I just want to be sure that some way we can, and there's probably other ones within the state that I call death traps. So hopefully we can find some money in here to correct a bunch of those.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Vickerman, there are several different ways that districts can access money, especially when it comes to the concerns of safety. We're grabbing a portion of that 5% flexible account, and we're going to spend it on safety projects all across the state. And we even allow the Metropolitan District to buy into this money, this pot of money, because there are a lot of, in greater Minnesota where the speeds are a little bit higher, Senator Vickerman, like on Highway 60 or Highway 14, and there is a collision, it normally has some pretty catastrophic consequences. Now, I know that Senator Jungbauer has a road up in his district. It's traveled a lot, and sometimes the speeds, let's just say not everybody drives a posted speed limit. But the majority of those accidents that normally happen around the intersection are rear-enders, and so it has a very high, there's very high crash data. The fatalities are a little bit lower than they would be like on Highway 60, but still it's very troubling. Lots of injuries. that result from that. And so that's the reason why we want to allow a metropolitan area to kind of buy into this, into that pot of money as well. The amount of money that's going to be over and above that districts get currently is going to be substantial under this bill, especially with the bonding portion of it. So there's no reason why down there in your district, Senator Vickerman, that that Highway 60 project can't be advanced. It's the same way with Highway 14, which runs through the lower part of my district, which is absolutely, several years ago, it was in the top five most dangerous roads in the United States. I'm sorry, in the top 50 most dangerous roads in the United States. So there's no reason why we can't get that cleaned up. That has a set of, issues all its own, where it goes from four lane to two lane to four lane to two lane, a lot of at-grade crossings. So there's no reason why, under this bill, those roads can't be fixed.
Period. Mr. Chair, one final comment. I agree with you, Senator Murphy, that we need to take care of the metro because three of my children live in the metro, North Metro. And my grandkids are there, and I want them to drive on a very safe road, just as safe a road as I drive on. So I think we have to partner, be together. This is one state. Don't put metro and rural against each other. This is one state.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Vickerman, you're right. It's one state, and we're going to try to build make our transportation safer all across it, from border to border. Mr. Chairman, on page 18 of the bill, line 5 is the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue. This is the same thing as last year. Article 4 is the local option sales tax, and I'm going to take a break right now and let Senator Dibble take over.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and try to fly over this fairly succinctly. It's largely similar, Mr. Chair, to the bill that was presented last year with a few changes here and there. What we propose to do is to establish a metropolitan transportation area, and that consists of the counties, the seven counties in the metropolitan area, as well as any adjoining counties who wish to be a part of that. And that's established through a joint powers agreement that they enter into themselves, and they establish the rules, the terms, the conditions, et cetera. And that's described, that piece of it is described at the top of, or near the top part of page 20. The counties that make up the metropolitan transportation area, acting as the boards of those counties, then are authorized to enact a half-cent sales tax in that metropolitan transportation area. That sales tax is split 50%, and on page 22 the apportionment is described. It's split 50% is devoted to transit purposes, capital and operating, 25% to roads and bridges, and 25% of that is flexible. And within that flexible 25%, only 1.25% of the total can be used potentially for bike and pedestrian purposes. On the Joint Powers Board, the Metropolitan Council Chair holds a voting seat. The joint to deal with the applications for use of those funds, what is called a Gears Board is established. And that consists of, that's described on page 20, and that consists of representatives of cities, counties, or other public agencies as well. On that Gears Board, the chair of the Transportation Committee of the Metropolitan Council holds a seat. Additionally, they can appoint a technical committee made up of engineers and staff-type folks from public agencies to help inform their work. In a major agreement arrived at through discussion, the Metropolitan Council will make the final determination for consistency of the allocation of these funds with the established transit portion of the Metropolitan Council Transportation Plan. If there's a substantive disagreement between the joint powers entity and the Metropolitan Council, there's a process provided for to work out a resolution to that disagreement. The Joint Powers Board is authorized to sell bonds. That's described on page 22. Another important change facet for the committee to be aware of is that in 2028, the half-cent sales tax, half of the half-cent sales tax sunsets, and so it drops down to a quarter of a cent. Also, if the Joint Powers Board fails to come together and form its form the Metropolitan Transportation Area and enact the half-cent sales tax by October of this year, this section does not go into effect. I think
Senator Foley.
Oh, one. If I may finish one more piece, Mr. Chair, that I missed. Of the sales tax that's collected, the first $30.8 million or so is allocated or this coming fiscal year is allocated to Metropolitan Transit for transit operating. That's to take care of the anticipated shortfall, the anticipated deficit that Met Council is facing this coming year, as well as the portion we spoke earlier about 50% for operating for light rail transit as well as other transit lines. That will take care of that portion as well.
Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, have you got any thought as to evening out those agencies or cities or areas that are opting out of the Metropolitan Council required thing?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I believe, Senator Foley, you're referring to I forgot to share one more idea that's in this, so I'll get back to that. You're referring to the transit taxing district, and that's the kind of the remaining vestige of property tax that's used for transit purposes in the metropolitan area. Remember, in 2001, we eliminated the use of the property tax for the bulk of funding for transit operations in the metropolitan area. In fact, other than what we pay for out of Hennepin County property taxes for 50% of Hiawatha Light Rail, we use no property tax in the metropolitan area for transit operations purposes. The vestige that did remain was using a small portion of the property tax in a subset of the metropolitan area for capital purposes to build park and rides and help buy buses and that sort of thing, and that goes to Metropolitan Transit as well as the opt-out entities. And the problem is that a lot of folks from outside the transit taxing district are taking full advantage of that effort that other taxpayers are going to. And the short answer is that idea is still being discussed actively. It probably won't go forward in this bill. It might go forward in the tax bill, the public finance bill. However, if this bill does go into effect, the sales tax will cover, all of those counties that become a part of the Metropolitan Transportation Area, and the sales tax will more than take care of both the transit operating and capital needs that we have, and very possibly we could contemplate eliminating that transit taxing district, from property tax entirely, because we'll have the funds that we need anyway. So the point, if we do our work and we pass this bill, that whole point may be moot.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Senator Dibble, I'm trying to understand, first of all, are there any, when you described this, are there any differences from last year? I wasn't clear on that, from last year's bill in this section.
Mr. Chair, the key differences are the Met Council having a full voting position on both the Joint Powers Board as well as on the GEARS Board. The Met Council has the authority to approve, to ensure for consistency the adopted transit portion of the transportation plan. The sunset that drops down to a quarter of a cent in 2028. The whole section expires if the joint powers don't get their act together by October of this year. I think, we also provide for the shortfall. That's something we've just got to do. We've got to provide for the shortfall that Metropolitan Transit is experiencing, so we don't have to go to the general fund this year in the deficit year, because we'll be raising the sources we need. The other idea that I forgot to mention earlier, Mr. Chair, is Those counties, Hennepin County and Ramsey County, raise about, you know, the vast majority of sales tax in the metropolitan area. We allow the joint powers to develop a weighted voting system. So other counties that maybe don't have as much transit coming online as quickly and have a smaller portion of the vote, we make sure that we provide that at a minimum what comes back to those counties from the sales tax that's raised and pooled comes back to those counties. So a Carver County that raises, you know, 1.whatever% of the sales tax in the metropolitan area will at least receive 1.whatever% in benefit, whether it's transit or road types of investments. It's called the minimum guarantee county concept, and that's just to provide an inducement for all the counties in the metropolitan area to get in.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble. And just kind of remind me, and you, I'm sure you laid this out last year as well as Senator Murphy, but when I talk to my constituents who are obviously in Ramsey County in the metropolitan area and explain to them that we need this half-cent sales tax to be able to have the major infusion of cash to build our transit infrastructure, why is it limited to, you know, 50%, between 50 and 75%? Why do we put any of this into roads at all when we already pay the gas tax for roads? And why does the metropolitan area need to tax itself for roads? I understand why I'm convinced we need to tax ourselves for transit, but why do we need to tax ourselves for roads?
Senator Dibble.
It's a great question, and if I had my druthers, I think we could probably very easily make full use of the full half cent in the metropolitan area. And it also begs a larger question: why don't we tax statewide, you know, sales tax for transit purposes, you know, that benefit not just the metro area but the whole state? These are grand philosophical conversations. Part of it is a question of practicality and what the counties who are going to make up this metropolitan transit area have come together in the Metro Transit Waste Development Board and the other tables that they sit around say that they need in order to, you know, because they're going to be held to account because they're going to be enacting this tax by resolution of these county boards. And so they have needs that are great. The simple fact is that counties have been going to great effort via their property tax to do a lot of the regional transportation, regional mobility needs that we have in the metropolitan area, and even in the exurbs, and their backlog is huge, and the impact on their property tax has been tremendous. And so, in order for them to feel comfortable, I think ultimately, you know, we'll see a lot more of these resources used for transit purposes as their constituents articulate and demand. Because it's 50% for transit and 25% is flexible, so conceivably up to 75% of the resources raised would be for transit or related purposes, and then 25% reserved for roads. To kind of keep the family together around this concept, that was an idea that we came up with.
And Senator, Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up one last question. I mean, I'm trying to still understand. Mm-hmm. I think metropolitan area residents could see that, again, that they're paying twice or three times because we're paying on the sale. We're paying our gas tax. We're paying now a sales tax. We also are paying on our property taxes for what everybody right. else in Minnesota just pays on the gas tax, I think. So I'm trying to understand how to explain to my constituents. Maybe I'm wrong. The property tax, probably that's happening in all counties where there's shortfalls. Just help me understand that so I can tell my again, I voted for this bill, and I support this bill, as you know, but I just want to be able to tell my constituents they're getting a fair deal out of this. And then you touched on the displacement of property taxes, hopefully with transit operating dollars, but maybe you could just I wasn't really clear on overall how much we can displace from property taxes by this half-cent sales tax. If you could just be clear about that, right. That would be helpful.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
It is probably important for the committee to know. It is very important for the committee to know, because I talk about it a lot to the public, so I'll talk about it to the committee as well. The entire state, all the counties in the entire state, and cities, this isn't confined just to county roads, but cities have gone to a lot of effort to provide for their transportation needs off the property tax that they wouldn't have had to otherwise because of our failure to invest in transportation purposes, roads and transit. So county county authorities, for example, are they're just not getting that portion of the gas tax that they did in the past through the allocation formula because the value has shrunk so much. Additionally, they've been advancing dollars for state projects and building those and going to their property tax and awaiting repayment, which is never forthcoming. And so the whole state has gone to the not just the metropolitan area, the whole state is putting forward a lot of effort from their property tax to provide for transportation needs that the state should be responsible for. And so the whole bill represents a great deal of property tax relief. And so that's a big offset. And so so that's, you know, not just the low income offset that we provide for that $25 for the, you know, for the lowest income, but everyone is going to do a lot better in terms of their property taxes. The Hennepin County right now pays $14 million off their property tax, I think, to help operate Hiawatha Light Rail. So that's fairly significant. And then the transit taxing district that does capital, you know, does the bus purchases and the park and ride lots and that sort of thing. I'm not sure how much that is, but, you know, that's, you know, it's probably a pretty small portion of their property tax, but it's, you know, nevertheless, it's property tax, and that might be able to go away as well. And I can't remember if I'm getting to your whole question or not.
Mr. Chair, just real quick, I don't want to monopolize this, but I've heard the number of $1 billion in property taxes we're paying for transportation. That's, I assume that's a statewide number. Is that accurate? That, I mean, maybe that's not. I just heard that somewhere. I mean, if you, I'm just looking for a number. If you have any kind of a number, what we're paying in property taxes for transportation, and how much this will relieve that, if we, if you have a number. I don't know if you can estimate that or not.
I think Margaret Donahoe from the Transportation Alliance has helped us hone in on these numbers, and that's roughly the number. I'm forgetting one other aspect of the proposal. Greater Minnesota counties themselves, separate from this metropolitan transportation area, do have the authority to enact a half-cent sales tax in there, within the boundaries of their county, for transportation purposes as well. So so it is even-handed in that sense. So even folks who aren't adjoining the metropolitan area, you know, three counties away, if they so choose, can elect to raise a half-cent sales tax for transportation purposes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
in regards to Senator Anderson's question, the number's been tossed around about $1 billion of property taxes for transportation-related expenses. There's townships in greater Minnesota where clearly half of their property tax is going to fix up the town roads. It's half of the township portion of the property tax. You know, there's been people who have, maybe I haven't been clear enough when making this point. We're not promising the folks in Minnesota that they're going to see their property tax bills go down because of this bill. But what I can say for sure is that outside of maybe a special project in a local jurisdiction where they have to raise a substantial amount to pay for their share of whatever transportation or transit project is going on, that this is going to help keep a cap on property taxes in regards to transportation issues. There's not going to be a reason for county boards or city councils to increase their property tax for transportation because of this bill. There's just, this bill is going to prevent that from happening. And that's what we've been telling the public. We haven't been saying that your property taxes are going to be slashed because of this bill. I think that would be, you know, that is a little bit of an overpromise. Something that Senator Dibble nor any of the House authors have been doing. We're just saying that this is going to help keep that property tax stable in regards to transportation.
Should I jump ahead and talk about these pieces?
Yeah. Sir Mitzen.
Well, just what Senator Murphy and Senator Dibble are exactly correct on the fact that I know where I come from in Dakota County, they front-ended, I would say, over $100 million worth of construction projects in the last two, 3 years in hopes of someday getting some state money back. So that's how the projects are being done, out our way. The need is there, but the money is not there, so consequently it goes on your ad valorem taxes, which so that's another reason why this is a good bill, because out my way we're spending millions and millions of dollars to do these necessary roads because there's no state money.
And
hope we get paid back, you know, but I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen makes two good points here. One is in regards to what Dakota County spends and what they do need to spend. Dakota County is one of those counties that is looking at massive tax increases to pay for east-west routes. They just basically don't have any. And it's limiting the opportunity for businesses to expand and relocate in places like Dakota County. Transportation is a huge concern for businesses. Senator Metzen and I and several others have worked out. That's a reason why there's that interchange account, for example, in this bill.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of jobs here this past year, and we're right on the edge of losing a lot more jobs and the potential to build and create jobs in Minnesota because of our transportation system. Things like this interchange account are going to help promote business activities around these areas where they do have good transit and transportation avenues. The other thing is, and maybe more to Senator Anderson's question earlier about the half-cent sales tax, in the metropolitan area, you know, you've got about 52-53% of the motoring public in the metropolitan area here. And some of the pieces of transportation infrastructure that need to be bought are high-ticket items, the Hastings Bridge, the Lafayette Bridge, you know, things like they didn't give away, they're not giving away the North Star or the Hiawatha, and so they're not going to give away, you know, any of the other, you know, the line on University or any of this. So the cost in the metropolitan area is actually higher. And in the metropolitan area, you know, just kind of a figure, a mile of road is over $3 million. In greater Minnesota, it's $850,000. So the cost to do projects in the metropolitan area is much higher, plus you've got pieces of infrastructure that need to be replaced that are the state's responsibility, like the Hastings Bridge, the Lafayette Bridge, that are going to take millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to fix. It was $393 million for the I-35W bridge. The Lafayette Street the Lafayette Bridge will be at least that expensive, and it's probably over $100 million or right around there for the Hastings Bridge. So big ticket items.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Dibble?
Very, very quickly, I'm just going to make a quick point, and then I was going to jump ahead and share another couple parts of the bill to round out the transit piece. But I just wanted to say, you know, and it's not just counties. If you read the paper a couple days ago, the city of Minneapolis is significantly shrinking its entire street program. It can't keep up with its municipal state aid streets, the major arterials, you know, which the gas tax helps to pay for. So it's rehabilitating fewer and fewer miles of those major arterials, those corridors through our city, and the resources it has to do the rehabilitation we need to our now very, very old city streets. We just paved the last of our city streets, so the first round, you know, are starting to deteriorate. All we can afford to do now is simple mill and overlay rather than the substructure and the gutter replacements that need to be done, hopefully to squeeze another 10 or so years out of those streets. If you don't take care of your streets, conceivably these residential streets can last forever if you take care of them sufficiently. If you don't take care of them and you allow the infiltration to occur, after a few years, you're digging out the whole street, replacing the substructure and rebuilding a whole. That's a much, much more expensive in the long run. That's a practical impact that we're seeing in our cities from the failure to invest at the state level. Maybe we'll respond to Senator Peruso, and then I'll finish up the presentation.
Was it Sarah Olson or Senator Peruso? Sarah Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, is there any provision in here similar to what was
put in the constitutional amendment that if the sales tax base is broadened, that an adjustment be made so that there isn't a huge windfall for this particular provision? Is that in here?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so.
No, it's based on...
It's for tax committee.
It's based on whatever is in the retail sales.
Mr. Chair, no, it's based under how we collect our current sales tax, what we collect current sales tax on, and there's no provision for any anticipated change broadening to, I assume you're talking about clothes and other kinds of services and the like.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there may be in the discussion, if there is a tax reform and a sales tax basis broadened, it might lead to a reduction in the percentage as a transition. Mm-hmm. But this is set. So it would mean that this area would have a windfall. But that's a matter for tax committee.
Right.
I don't know that they caught it last year, but mm-hmm. perhaps it ought to be a topic of conversation there. I also had one other question when you brought up about the interchange project. Well, that isn't specifically related to transit. You have an equal division between rural and metro. What was the basis for deciding that as to whether there's greater, is there equal need in terms of the potential interchanges in one versus the other?
Trying to
visualize that, or what was the basis for deciding that rather than leaving it open and determining where the greatest needs are, rather than putting a 50-50 break between one or the other?
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, you're talking about the interchange account and the breakdown on that. Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, this kind of goes along with some of the things that we've tried to do here and that the governor has actually helped out with. And it's economic development all across the state, not just in the metropolitan area. But in greater Minnesota, we've found that these transportation projects are almost key to getting any new development. If somebody doesn't have easy access to the highway and to their market, they're not going to relocate and in places like Amboy. They're just not. And so we wanted to put a hard 50-50 split in here, much like we did back in the 03 bill that was supposed to, or 02 bill that was supposed to, I'm sorry, I was right the first time, the 03 bill, where there was supposed to be a hard division between greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area. We've done that so that greater Minnesota has just as much advantage to offer as the metropolitan area when it comes to transportation services.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not... You jump to the conclusion that I think that the metro area needs more interchanges. I'm not sure what the inventory is, but I would have a hunch that we have more in the metro area than we might have in greater Minnesota. And I guess it's where the need is. If there were needs that you have described that exceeded 50% through greater Minnesota on major roads or that could do that, why would you restrict that? Is there... why would you restrict that from more going there versus here? I wasn't trying to make a case for the metro area needing more. I just wondered if there was any notion of both the inventory in both places and where that demand actually might be, or if you just set an arbitrary figure.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we put that number in there for the simple fact that we've been promised things in greater Minnesota before, and they haven't transpired.
Senator Barrasso.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I'm sorry I was late. But I have, as I go through the bill, I see that on page 24 you have a provision in here that accounts for the outstate counties who want to be part of something like this to have a referendum of their people. Do you have an equivalent space in someplace in here for the metro seven counties to pass a vote of the people before it's instituted?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Paraso, this is it's the same idea as last year, and this is all constitutional. in the metropolitan area, we can impose a tax because it is already an established taxing district that has more than 1 million people, and that is basically what the state's constitution says. In Greater Minnesota, you do need a vote of the people because it these counties are taxing districts that are less than 1 million people.
Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up, do you find that that makes it more important for the outstate people to have a vote of the people than the metro counties? Is the population just a little larger here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Parasol, we're just going by what the Constitution allows. There's several different trains of thought about having a referendum in the metropolitan area. Here's my train of thought. That time has come and gone. We need to have this tax implemented as soon as reasonably possible, Senator Parasol. Right now, the Metropolitan Council is going to, they're making plans to drastically reduce service in the metropolitan area if this bill does not pass. They have a huge shortfall right on the horizon. We need this to pass as soon as reasonably possible. We don't need a voter referendum in the metropolitan area. The state's constitution allows for that.
And can I just follow up on that?
This is basically the same deal that the governor gave the twins, Senator Parasol.
And that was going to be my comment, Senator Murphy, that as I understand what's in this legislation, there's the joint powers agreement. So a county participating in the metropolitan area would have to take an affirmative step toward participation in the tax. Is that correct?
Right. Right, so, Mr. Chairman.
So that's no different than
Flynn's got.
So that's no different than the bill that the governor signed, where Hennepin County had to take an affirmative step to participate in that tax for the purpose of the Twin Stadium. So it's the same thing totally, isn't it?
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, it's the same concept. It's just that there's a couple more counties involved other than just Hennepin.
Well, but understand that in the case of the baseball stadium, it was a single county.
Right.
Because the stadium is being built in a single county. In this instance, you're talking about services that are multi-county, but the parallel is exact. So I assume what you're hoping is that the governor would be consistent, that if he was willing to sign a bill for a local option county tax for the Twins, that he might be willing to sign a bill where the counties have to – we're not imposing this on the counties. They have to participate.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, to that point?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, the defined, you said that the metropolitan area is a defined area and it exceeds $1 million, and that's why the Constitution allows that. Is that defined, or is that an open area by definition? What I'm getting at, you got your briefing there. What I'm getting at is that a floating area so that it will accommodate any county? If the counties keep going and gets all the way to St. Cloud and all the way to Rochester that wants to attach itself to this 7-county metro area, can all of those counties then exercise the sales tax without having the referendum?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, Ms. Berezovsky told me that each county is taking the vote and they are the taxing district in the metropolitan area is the reason why that they can do that. Now, when you're talking about the string of counties leading to either St. Cloud or, you know, down to Olmsted County, I believe that Senator Dibble has been working on a provision that we're going to put in the tax bill on Wednesday. The House is going to do it today, I believe. Mm-hmm. That would prevent this leapfrogging from happening.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it wouldn't be leapfrogging. It would be, you said, if they're contiguous, and the
right.
contiguous
well,
thing
I'm,
can
yeah, that's
can grow. So,
down
so it, what this applies to is only the 7-county metro area, then would be allowed to do it without referendum. None of the adjoining counties that would like to be a part of that district and add it could do so without a referendum.
No. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
the counties that would like to join the larger transportation metropolitan transportation area can join absent a referendum, because they're joining this larger body that doesn't have the referendum requirement on it. So it's the 7-county metro area, and then the adjacent counties as well.
Just to clarify then, there is a floating definition of what that metro area is that will be based on who decides they want to be a part of that joint powers area.
Yes.
That then
yes.
qualifies them to be exempt from the referendum.
Yes. However,
is that what you're trying to clarify and change language in the statute?
Yes. Yes. Mr. Chair. I believe the clarifying statute that will be offered, or the clarifying amendment that will be offered on Wednesday in taxes, will speak to a better definition of the metropolitan, the 7-county metropolitan area, the adjoining ring counties around that, but will also provide for the counties that connect up to along the North Star corridor to St. Cloud, because they're already part of the North Star Development Authority that are working on that extension. So it'll be 7-county metro area, the counties that ring that. But I think then it kind of reaches up and allows one additional county so that already identified transit line up to St. Cloud can be a part of the metropolitan taxing.
So, Mr.
area.
Chairman, that language and definition will be for this purpose only, or is that going to then be an open door for Met Council to take jurisdiction of other issues, including all of those counties?
Mr. Chair, no. No, this will not extend the reach of the Metropolitan Council. In fact, the Metropolitan Council, when it approves the grants that are made by the Joint Powers Board, I think will continue to confine its gaze to those areas in which it has established statutory jurisdiction, which is in the 7-county metropolitan area. So I don't think it'll be as interested in the longer reach of the commuter lines that go beyond the metropolitan area.
As a point to that, have I seen the provision in here for those collar counties, if you want to call them that, who opt in to have representation on your boards, your mm-hmm. decision-making bodies?
Mr. Chair, that's spelled out in at the top of page 20. Before imposing the taxes, each participating county in the metropolitan transportation area, and that's defined as the 7 counties or anyone who wants to be a part of it, must enter into a joint powers agreement. And then there's descriptive language that shows how they're going to be represented on that joint powers board.
So Mr. Chairman, to this point again, Mr. Chairman, sure. Senator Dibble,
yes.
I thought I just heard you say that that grant, the GEARS process, will apply only to the, because it's consistent with the Metropolitan Council's transportation policy, would only apply to this 7-county metro area. Then how would the counties that are beyond that reach obtain grants if this is the process by which grants using those funds are awarded?
Mr. Chair, there's no restriction on this money being spent for purposes that are outside the transit portion of the metropolitan area transportation plan. But for those grants that are made, for those purposes, the Metropolitan Council, too many metropolitans in here, has to make sure that, for example, the GEARS Board and the Joint Powers Board isn't dreaming up some transit line within the metropolitan area that no one's ever talked about, doesn't appear on any maps or that sort of thing. But it doesn't restrict or preclude grants being made, for example, for, commuter rail that's going to reach, into the collar counties. There's no restriction. But for those grants that are made inside the Metropolitan Council's jurisdiction, they want to be sure that the those plans are consistent with their approved transit portion of the transportation plan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think if I were representing counties that are around that, you said there's no restriction, mm-hmm. but there's no direction that some of it has to go to counties that are participating and putting money into that pool. If I were representing those, I'd want to be sure that you've got some clarity in that language that comes about, that it would.
I think we provide for that, Mr. Chair, in the minimum guarantee county provisions on 19, 20 through 23. Anyone who participates is going to get at least a minimum of what they contribute back. I'm guessing most, at some point along, they will get a whole lot more, mm-hmm. you know, as priorities shift from facility to facility. There'll be a lot of effort that the whole metropolitan area goes to this year to focus on that, building out that transitway, for example, or that roadway.
Okay. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, is there any general fund spending in this bill that's not covered by a source of revenue that you have in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, there is some general fund money currently in the bill, but we have a couple of amendments that's going to take out the vast majority of it.
By vast majority, Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, what do you mean?
That would be called most.
How much are you taking out and how much is left?
I think that would be a good idea because they keep talking about it.
And how much does that amount to in that?
Mr. Chair?
Okay, Mr. Chairman Senator Berglund, we're taking out about a third of the general fund spending here.
And how much is the general fund spending?
Looks like it's about $8 million. I'm sorry, 6.3, and we're going to take out 2.7.
So there's still 4.3.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund.
Senator Murphy, the reason I ask is because the 3.6 that you have left in the bill is money that we don't actually have. And this is a finance committee.
Yes.
And it seems to me we've been asking a lot of tax questions, but this is a finance committee. And so it means that somebody around this table then has to cut $3.6 million out of some other budget in order for you to spend this.
So, Senator Berglund, Senator Murphy and I have had a variety of conversations relative to that exact point. I was going to wait to get into it until we had Senator Murphy's amendments so that we knew exactly how much general fund dollars Senator Murphy was proposing. Part of the problem we have is that Senator Murphy has attempted to draft a bill, to be blunt, that will secure passage in the House and the Senate. And so you have some appropriations that lend themselves to that purpose. I think there are a couple of other things that where the commitment has been made. Senator Murphy, I think the Medtronic provision, for instance, mm-hmm. has been going on for a period of time. I think what you've excluded, and you alluded to it a couple of minutes ago, is the deficiency for Metropolitan Transit. And you and I have talked about that as to whether or not that would be carried and attempted to be carried in either the supplemental finance bill or some type of deficiency bill, or whether or not we would assume that this bill will take care of the deficiency. So I can tell you, Senator Berglund, that initially Senator Murphy had made a request for, I want to say upwards, there was some discussion earlier of maybe upwards of $20-25 million in general fund dollars, which has been reduced significantly. The biggest impact is not so much this year, and given the problems we have, obviously, if we're going to craft this bill in a way that will secure passage, there is a cost that obviously we'll have to cover. The bigger problem is going to be the MVEST dedication in the next biennium. That's the real problem.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, I just bring it up because we're all struggling with what the deficit, what we expect the deficit is at the moment and what it might become by the end of February. And so it's really easy to spend money, but it's not very easy to come up with it these days. And so I just want to raise that concern.
Mr. Chairman,
this really has nothing to do with Senator Murphy's bill, except that it is an example of what I consider to be sort of a backward process around here of having bills go to the tax committee after they've been to the finance committee, because they will be making a number of changes that have been alluded to here today, and those changes could change the appropriations in the bill. Now, we wouldn't think of having a bill come to finance and we would change the taxes in it.
Senator Berglund, I have been assured that there will not be changes impacting the general fund budget out of this committee. Otherwise, I would ask that the bill come back here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you understand the issue that I'm referring
yes.
to, where we have sort of this last couple of years had bills going from finance to taxes and then to the floor, and they can end up needing, when they change the assumed taxes in the bill, to change the appropriations as well.
Again, if we find this bill has changed in the tax committee, I'll ask that it come back to this committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Just very quickly, if I could finish up the transit portion of the bill. I'll skip ahead to the last page, starting at the bottom of page 35 and finishing up on page 36. This is where we provide for the restriction on counties to contribute to the capital effort as well as the operating effort for transit ways, specifically light rail and commuter rail. Capital costs are will be capped. This is the same as last year, Mr. Chair. Capped out at 10% effort, and it's appropriate for because it is counties that help acquire land and go to some effort for the capital costs of these interregional and regional rail corridors, and then it prohibits the county property taxpayers from paying for operating purposes. The change from last year is that this does continue to allow counties to help pay for these bus commuter demonstrations that help establish the need for and help establish the viability of commuter routes. So that's a slight difference. And then in a very smart move, looking to other metropolitan areas that have managed to package up a series, take a big portion of their transportation, their transit plan for their region, package them up into one package and approach the FTA, offer those as a package and approach the FTA for the federal match for those, similar to what Salt Lake City has done and some others. We're trying to emulate that model and see if we can't do that here in the metropolitan area and get a leap ahead on really getting these projects in the ground that we really need that we're already falling behind on pretty desperately. That's Section 8.
Okay. Yeah, Senator Mr. Murphy. Chairman, and this was a proposal from the Senate. There's been a couple proposals from the House that are pretty decent. I think this is one from the Senate going to the House that is probably going to be the key to getting much of the transit ways built in the metropolitan area. It makes sense. Salt Lake City did the same thing as Senator Dibble said, but they sold it based upon the fact that they had a guaranteed source of revenue, much like we'll have once this bill is enacted into law. We've got a half-cent sales tax that's on for the next approximately 20 years or so to help with all the construction costs that are going to be carried here in the metropolitan area. Folks, we just need to do it. That's all there is to it. I mean, the economic vitality of the metropolitan area is at stake here. There's going to be a million more people in this area in less than 10 years. And where are they going to travel? We don't have the transit system or the roadway system right now to handle what we currently have. Dump in a million more people, and it's going to make it even worse. So this is one way that we can get ahead of the game. And, Mr. Chair, with that, I think maybe we can just walk through the rest of the bill quickly and then do the amendments. I know that we've got to get out of here shortly. But Article 5 is the what's called the CASA formula. same as last year. This is the formula that was put together and adopted by all 87 counties. And, you know, Ms. Loveroe and her group, Mr. Mulder, have done a wonderful job of getting all the counties moving in the same direction on this. Now, we have to understand that there are some winners and there are some people who don't do as well under this system, but all 87 counties voted on it. All 87 counties approve of it. So what I'm trying to say is let's just leave that one alone. Article 6 is talks about restricting some toll facilities. This basically says that if we don't have a toll on it now, you're not going to put a toll on it in the future. This is in regards to some of the things that are have been going on with the 394 project. This is a project that's led the nation in what's called targeted tolling. It basically allows new construction to be tolled. And we've actually reduced some of the amount of congestion out on 394 by simply allowing this tolling to go on. What we found was roughly about 40% of the people that were out there driving during peak hours, they didn't need to be there. They were going to Walmart or they were going to the dentist or someplace. They were doing something that they probably could have waited until like 11 o'clock to do or maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon instead of driving right during rush hour, peak hours. So we got rid of some of that 40% and we freed up a lane for congestion pricing so that if people want to pay $5 to get to work and get there quickly, they can do that. But what we're saying here is that we're not going to toll anything today. I mean, the Truckers Association has made good points against tolling, and, well, it just doesn't work out very well. On page 30, we start to talk about this flexible highway account. This is what's called the 5% account. We're going to use that for, like we always have, on turnbacks, and then we're going to redirect some of that money for safety improvements on county highways, municipal highways, streets, towns, roads, and routes of regional significance. On page 31, looking at section 5, this is the one of the things that came from the House. This is the bridge account, and it sets up a three-tiered system, which is on the next page, page 32. It talks about Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, puts specific bridges in those programs, and then just sets a target date of, I believe, 2018, that all of these bridges in Tiers 1, 2, and 3 will be identified and rectified. So we're giving the department $600 million to do bridge work on state trunk highways, and we're setting a target, saying by 2018 we want all these bridges fixed. And if you can't fix them, you better come back with a good reason. But I think that they are going to get fixed, period. I think Senator Dibble already went over some of those last pages. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer up a couple of amendments to get this bill in the shape that we need to send it over to taxes. The first thing the first amendment is the A13 amendment, Mr. Chairman, and the A13 amendment goes on page 5 of the bill. Section 4 deals with public safety, and this is removing $1.5 million of money, and that was for the additional money for capital security. bless you. Mr. Chairman, again. Mr. Chairman, it's important to note that the capital security increase of $1.5 million that was carried in the bill last year is not even carried or won't be even carried in the governor's bill. So we're trying to do our thing, Senator Berglund, and try to reduce the general fund appropriation here, and I would move adoption of the A13 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion on the A13 amendment. Is there further discussion of the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I would have the A14 amendment. The A14 amendment reduces the general fund spending by $1.2 million, and this is the jettisoning of the Medtronic land transaction, and I would move the A14 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, we don't have it yet.
We don't have it.
I'm sorry. I thought it had been distributed. Okay. Okay. Does everybody have the amendment? Almost. If everybody has the amendment, we have Senator Murphy's motion to approve the A14 amendment. Further discussion or questions?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one quick question for Senator Murphy. Senator Murphy, I know you've watched closely over the years to see that the money we expend from the Trunk Highway Fund meets the constitutional requirements, and I'm wondering if this section we're deleting raises a concern about that.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, we routinely buy property with gas tax money that's in association with a road project. That's not the reason why this money's leaving the bill. It's basically that we don't have $1.2 million to spend of general fund money. And by the way, this isn't gas tax money. This is general fund money. But we do buy property with gas tax money. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't be building roads. But
well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, but we're reimbursing the Trunk Highway Fund, which I suspect we're doing because somebody said that probably we should meet the
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, yeah, you're right. The federal government has, and I'm not exactly sure if it's been they fined us or they found us out of compliance.
They just want us to giving it to the city, transferring it to the city.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, the federal government has basically forced us into shifting money around. They've said that, you know, we need to make this transaction sooner or later, but they're kind of moving our money around for us. Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, if you want a complete rundown on this, we can have Ms. Boyd come over and run it down for you, but this is just... It's $1.2 million of general fund money that is leaving the bill, and the federal government is very cognizant that we have not expended this money. I made this transaction whole. And if you want MnDOT to talk about it, we can have those guys talk about it. And
well, Mr. Chairman, that isn't necessary. I would just want to raise the point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, someday that's probably going to get covered up, but for right now, I don't think that that's going to be part of the governor's package either because nobody has $1 million.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion on the A14 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
The Medtronic Highway.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A15 amendment.
Did we pass 8-3?
Oh, we just voted to take them
and
out.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, maybe we can have the A16 and 17 amendments passed out as well. These are going to go fairly quickly. The A15 amendment is basically a technical amendment. And it's just asking that the Commissioner of Revenue to estimate the motor vehicle
lease sales tax revenues and the cost of the low income tax credit and to transfer the net of that revenue for transportation purposes.
And this is the A-15, is that correct?
This is the A-15 amendment.
Okay. Is there further discussion, questions about the A-15 amendment?
I don't have a copy yet.
Okay, hasn't been distributed yet?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, once again, this is a technical amendment. It just kind of puts some dates in the proper place. I would renew my motion on the A-15 amendment.
Okay, does everybody have the A-15 amendment?
I don't know if I twist it.
Is there any further discussion or questions? If not, Senator Murphy moves adoption. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, next is the A-16 amendment, and I have an oral amendment to make on the A-16 amendment.
And
that's on line 18.
Mr. Chair, we have 17, okay,
let's,
but we don't have 16 yet. Before us. We don't have 16.
Let's wait until it's distributed.
Thank you. More than one page. This thing, when I try to type it.
Okay, does everybody have the A-16 amendment?
No.
No.
Horse, no, it says horse force. It gets it.
No, you don't.
It has some pretty funny results.
Appetizer.
Yeah, right. That's
thank you.
It's some water.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy, can you explain the A-16 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, first I need to change a number on that. On line 18, I would incorporate the change where it says page 19, line 35. That's supposed to be line 31. I would incorporate that in the motion to adopt the A-16 amendment. The A-16 amendment, what this does is it limits MnDOT program delivery expenditures for trunk highway bonding projects to 17%. We normally limit that number between 15% and 17%, and the program delivery is just those activities that go on that are not pouring concrete. It's, you know, doing assessments of property, kind of engineering the project, making sure that, you know, all the surveying's done, stuff like that. So we're just, and this is nothing new. We always do this, and the number is normally between 15 and 17%. The House wanted to go up to 20. We convinced them that 17 is the as high as the Senate wanted to go. This also provides for a withdrawal of a county from the Joint Powers Agreement. And provides for the tax to be terminated when the Joint Powers Agreement ends and all debt obligations are paid off. Basically, if somebody wants to remove themselves from the Joint Powers Agreement, they can do that. But if there's any expenditures that were done inside that district, that money would have to be paid off before the tax blinks off. So if Carver County gets in and then 10 years down the road they want to get out, Senator Roebling, they could do so, but only after any debt that was accumulated on behalf of Carver County was paid off.
Mr. Chair. Okay, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'm just engrossing this, and I think there's an error on line 18 of the amendment. It says page 19, line 35, and there is no line 35.
Mr. Chairman and Senator
Sorry,
Anderson, that was I already incorporated
Sorry.
That. In,
I missed
okay,
that.
Not a problem.
What line?
31.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, in regards to the last portion of this, in regards to the Joint Powers Agreement, this is something that was put in. This is something that's going in the bill now. In the House, is doing the same thing. And we're basically doing this so that there's off-ramps on the bill when it comes to this joint powers agreement in the metropolitan area. The discussion has always been, okay, when people get in, what happens? Well, somebody brought up the question, well, what happens if somebody wants to get out? So we're providing an off-ramp. But we're saying that if the Joint Powers Board accumulates debt and, say, it was in Carver County, they can only get out after that debt was retired. And it would have to be debt for a project that was in Carver County. So it allows for that off-ramp. And, Mr. Chairman, with the change on line 18, I would renew my motion on the A-16 amendment.
Okay, we have the A-16 amendment. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, and then there's the A-17 amendment, and this just corrects the trunk highway appropriations according to the amendments that we put in there. But there's two numbers that need to be changed, and those are on... It's the same number, but on lines 3 and 4, it says $4,275,000. That number is now $2,775,000. And we can change that in both lines 3 and 4.
Of the amendment?
Delete 4.275 and insert... 2.775 million.
Okay. We'll make those changes. That I believe everybody has the A-17 amendment.
That's on both 3 and 4, Mr. Chairman.
On both 3 and 4, yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas.
Okay. Does everybody have the changes? Everybody has the amendment. Is there further discussion? Senator Murphy moves adoption of the A-17 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, once again, I feel very strongly that this bill is going to help provide a safer road system, and it's also going to help jumpstart our economy. Over a 10-year period, we will spend approximately $8.3 billion on our roads and transit systems here in the state of Minnesota. And that number could easily be $24 billion. Right now, by using MnDOT's, by using MnDOT's calculations, we're behind industry standards about $2.4 billion of investment every year. If you stretch that out over a 10-year construction period, we're looking at about $18 billion, and I only say that because the 2.4 billion number is front end loading a 10-year building project. So we're getting closer to where we need to be. But you have to understand that this tax increase is falls far short of meeting all of the needs that we have in transportation. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would move Senate File 2521 as amended to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, before we have the vote, I want to ask Mr. Mossman to make sure that the Finance Committee understands where we are with general fund dollars in the bill now as amended, so we have a clear sense of what type of cost we're going to have to, as a Finance Committee, cover. And obviously, Senator Murphy's a member of the committee and will be participating in those decisions, because, as Senator Berglund pointed out a few minutes ago, whatever happens on February 28th, it's not going to be good. And so this is a cost to the general fund in the same way that the bonding bill is a cost to the general fund. I've had discussions with Senator Langseth. I don't have an exact number from Senator Langseth, but we're going to, given what Senator Langseth would like to do relative to a bonding bill, we've got to cover the general fund cost. There are general fund dollars in the bonding bill, as well as the cost of additional debt service based upon the the higher amount. So the Finance Committee has to cover that general fund cost. The other major expenditure, and this doesn't take into account some of the deficiency costs we'll have to absorb, as well as some of the other kinds of one-time expenditures, or not one-time expenditures, but other expenditures that always come up as a matter of course on a supplemental basis. The other significant expenditure, and I have a meeting, I believe, after session, during session with my seatmate, Senator Latz, will be the Victims Compensation Fund for the I-35 bridge. So members of the committee, and certainly the new members of the committee, two of the members, the minority members, have served on the committee before. The other new majority caucus members are division chairs who understand what we're facing. We have to cover the costs. So, Mr. Mossman, can you go through, as the bill is now in front of us with Senator Murphy's amendments, what the general fund expenditures are that are not otherwise covered by Senator Murphy's bill?
Mr. Chair and members, as per the A-17 amendment, which you just recently adopted, the direct general fund appropriations in the bill total $2.775 million. That amount consists of four provisions in fiscal 09 that are all one-time provisions. On page 2 of the bill, there's the $1.7 million appropriation for transit, as well as a $250,000 appropriation for the North Star Corridor Development Authority study. On page 3 of the bill, there's a $500,000 general fund appropriation for port development assistance. And then on page 7 of the bill, there is a $325,000 general fund appropriation for the value capture study. In addition to that $2.775 million for fiscal 09, there is, as the Senator Murphy went over earlier, there's $60 million worth of GO, General Obligation Bonding Authority, in the bill. And there is existing and current law an open and standing appropriation to pay debt service on general obligation bonds when that authority is issued. So that bonding provision will have an $827,000 impact in fiscal 09, bringing the total fiscal 09 impact in the general fund to $3.6 million. Obviously, the debt service will continue into the tails, fiscal 10 and 11, of $9.8 million. And then there are two other provisions in the bill that take effect in fiscal 10 and 11. One is the DUI reinstatement installment proposal that begins, I believe, on page 33 of the bill and goes on to page 34 and 35 of the bill. Has an impact of $9 million in fiscal 10 and 11. And then in addition to that, there's the MVEST lease sales provision combined with the offset to pay for the low-income credit that is in the bill, and that has an impact of about $101 million, bringing the total tails estimate to about $110.7 million in the tails.
And members, we'll see what happens on February 28th. As members will recall, the November forecast suggested a not insignificant deficit for the out years of 10-11. And obviously, these figures were not in that projected deficit for 10-11. So if and I think members are familiar with the MVEST transfer relative to the leased car sales. It parallels what was done on the ballot in 2006. But when we're doing budgets next year for the 10-11 biennium, we will add to that deficit that $113 million. And this isn't to suggest a criticism of Senator Murphy. To the contrary, we all know how difficult this bill has been to put together, the competing interests, whether geographic, political, or otherwise. And given the enormity of what's needed and the enormity of just what political situation is relative to this bill, you're not going to do it without some cost. And Senator Murphy, I appreciate your help in terms of 09, because I know you weren't happy about the exclusion of some of the provisions. So I appreciate your help in terms of the 09 budget. Obviously, the major cost for 10-11 is the leased car sales, and we had done that last year as well. Obviously, we did that last year without the expectation of quite the size deficit that we'll face next year. And I do just want to point out parenthetically, members, that I don't think anybody is being held, you know, harmless in this regard. Obviously, Senator Murphy has participated, as have other division chairs, in terms of trying to determine how we deal with the deficit this year. And I recognize that there are times when you just have to do some of this. I note the couple of studies, and I just want to suggest members may or may not recall in Senator Betzold's State Department's bill last year, there was a provision for the Budget Trends Study Commission, which was my legislation. And Senator Betzold, again, you had, as all the division chairs did, had some fairly difficult decisions to make, and so you allowed the commission to be established without any funding for it. And that commission began work in the fall. The chairman of the commission are former commissioners Kevin Goodnow and Jay Kodrowski. They've told me they don't need any funding for the commission. I've asked them whether or not there would be the need for a supplemental appropriation. They think they can deal with the present finance department staff. So, you know, it varies from commission to commission. But in this instance, given the geographies involved, it's a little bit tougher to do that without some kind of small general fund appropriation. So, Senator Murphy, again, appreciate your willingness to help in terms of 09. Again, the lease sale is something that's been out there. You know, the population, at least as expressed by the election in 2006, wanted the MVEST transfer to take place. But as we knew at that time, in 2006, there'd be a cost to the general fund, and obviously that's going to be exacerbated when we face a deficit in 10-11. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mossman, did you say that part of the $3.6 million is one-time money? I didn't catch how much.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, of the $3.6 million, $2.8 actually is one-time money.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I'm looking at the spreadsheet and I'm still seeing some general fund items, and I just wanted to clarify if those were deleted from the bill. For example, on page 2, at the bottom of the page, capital security indicates general fund of $1.5 million. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, that was in the amendment that deleted.
That was deleted. Okay. Mr. Chairman, then also on page 3 on the budget sheet, did we also delete the second box down, MnDOT multimodal systems and DPS state patrol? I understand the value capture study is still in there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, yes, that's the same. That's a summary table there, and so that 1.5 there is the capital security, and that was deleted. And then also if you drop down just a little further into the third box there where it's listing the one-time transfer for the Medtronic sale, that general fund, the general, that provision has been eliminated also.
What did we do with the state patrol? I'm not understanding your box.
There was a...
We moved it to Trunk Highway?
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Pappas, where it says State Patrol, that should have said Capital Security. That's the Capital Security component, and that's gone, that 1.5.
So that's under the same, it doesn't look like it is. Mr. Chairman, it looks like on page 2 you summarize that box, and then it looks like on page 3 this is another total summary, total general fund. Is that what that is? Mm-hmm. Total general fund. Oh. Okay. I just have to talk it through, and then I understand it.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas, are you satisfied?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, just one clarification. Is the port development assistance one-time appropriation, is that for Duluth Port? We got a lot of port authorities, but is that the Duluth Port that's at one?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, no. It's not for the Duluth Port.
What, Mr. Chairman, then what is it for?
It's actually, and is there anybody from ports here that would want to explain this? Well, Mr. Rudin is here from MnDOT.
For the record, I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. It would be for the five publicly owned ports in the state, which are Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, Winona, and Red Wing. It could be used at any of those ports through our existing port development assistance program.
Okay. So it's just a generic thing, and you'll use it anywhere?
Correct.
Not for a specific project?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, the ports came with a request that was it $10 million, Mr. Rudin? I believe it was right around $10 million. There's going to be a little money in the bonding bill for that, and this is a $500,000 for the same purpose. But they've have projects right now that they could be doing that would be in that $30 million range, but they only requested 10. Of the 10, they've decided that if it keeps getting winnowed down, that there's a project that needs to be done, ASAP down in Winona, and I believe a small one in Red Wing. And they would settle for having those two lower numbers if that's what it took to get it into the bonding bill.
Senator Foley. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, you've got a number of fee increases in your bill, and I'm just cautioning you that you not do that, and that there are some bills already in that are in the nature of cutting. And I'm just alerting you to that. I realize the bill has already been passed out of here, but it's a serious problem we've taken, and I assume responsibility, but we've got people that have got tremendously high fees. And they're not going to get a driver's license. They're not going to get a registration thing just because the cost is too high.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I think the Senator Foley might be referring to the DUI reinstatement fee. That's actually not a fee increase, Senator Foley. That's just allowing people to pay that reinstatement fee over time, spreading out their payments so that it's not a big hit to those folks all at one time, so that we bring them into conformance and compliance in a way that they're able to.
And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Foley, we set that up because there's at least one group, the traumatic brain injury group, that draws money out of that DUI reinstatement fee to provide services. So there is an appropriation in here to that account, basically, so that group would not lose any of their funding. You do bring up a good point about fees, and I'll just alert the committee right now is that we're going to be coming with a bill to build DVS, a Division of Vehicle Services, a new computer system. And, folks, let me tell you, the computer system that they've been dealing with for quite a few years is it's junk, and it needs to be replaced. And we are going to increase some of those fees. We just went last year or 2 years ago to a fee-based system for DVS so that their fees actually reflect the true cost of providing that service. We're going to have to kick it up. But here's the thing is that they make millions and millions of transactions every day, and I think Senator Olson figured it out that we would have to increase the fee about a quarter a transaction over like a 10-year period to pay for it all. So it's not a big fee increase.
But you look at it, Mr. Chairman, tell me what the current cost of getting a DUI license reinstated.
Oh, man.
$685.
Senator,
about $800 or somewhere in there.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, it's $250 plus $430 surcharge, so it's a lot of money. That's a change we made a few years ago. The reason it looks like an increase is because the way we had enacted it at that time called for the increase, you know, kind of a stepped increase, but now that's taken effect, and so that language is moot. So that was just brought into conformance with current practice, and then the schedule, the option to slow down the payment or create the payments is then drawn up.
Mr. Chairman, we're being both tough and lenient with DWI offenders. You know, there's other countries on this planet where you only get one chance. You get a DWI, you're done. You never get to drive again. We're trying to set it up so that, you know, there is a hefty fine because we want to get people's attention. And here's the part of the attention that we've gotten from people. About 90% of the people that get a DWI, they never get another one. And that's why we set those fees high. We want to get people's attention. This is an activity that we don't want happening. We also look and say that is a pretty high fee, you know, for working families. They may not be able to pay it all at once. So we're going to give them an opportunity to pay it in a couple payments. But we want to get people's attention. Drunk driving kills people every year. About a quarter of the fatal crashes that happen on our roads, over a quarter of them, have some sort of alcohol component. 503 people that lost their lives last year, do 25%. It's uncalled for. We want to get their attention.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, I recognize we've got a floor session. I do want to visit an issue that I was out of the room for on the money transfer for the trunk highway in Moundsview. I'm aware of that. There may be a small issue that may have to be looked at by council. That land originally was MnDOT land and had a covenant on it for recreational purposes. This is a golf course. Subsequently, when Medtronic wanted to build a facility on there, I actually had a bill in 05 to eliminate the covenant. The House went in a different direction and had us buy the land and pay MnDOT $1.2 million, and that's what this is eliminating. I don't know if that covenant was eliminated, though, in the process, because by buying the land, I think we were going to take care of that covenant. But if the funding is eliminated, I don't know where that covenant land is. And there's a big building on it right now, so it can't be used for recreational purposes. But I'm just wondering, you know, just we may have to go back and look at the history here to see what happened in the House and how that language is structured so that we're not screwing up the title of the land.
Did you want a response from Mr. Watson?
Well, if they know, but they may have to look at that just between now and the floor.
Okay. All right. Further questions, comments, discussion on Senate File 2521? If not, Senator Murphy.